Hiya, Tim here with a message before the podcast. Due to rights reasons, the songs have been shortened for this podcast. Every song is taken from the Sigur Rós album, The Brackets album. All tracks are written by Sigur Rós. The Brackets album was released on 20th of October 2002 on Fat Cat and Bad Taste. Now, enjoy the podcast.
Where real music matters.
Absolute Radio.
Tim's Listening Party.
Hiya, I'm Tim Burgess and welcome to another episode of Tim's Listening Party on Absolute Radio. If you're new to the show, here is where I go through an album with an artist, hearing the stories behind it. I've had lots of great chats so far with guests from ABC and the Kinks to Bon Jovi and the B-52s. To find any previous episodes, just search for Tim's Listening Party wherever you get your podcasts to discover a whole archive of past listening parties. Just like Tim's Twitter Listening Party, a huge part of this is your involvement. So please get involved on social media throughout the show using the hashtag Tim's Listening Party and check out at Tim_Burgess and at Absolute Radio for more Listening Party content. Last year I recorded a very special episode with Kjartan Svensson from Sigur Rós for their 2002 album, The Brackets album, at Iceland Airwaves Festival. It was the first time we had held a listening party live in the actual space that the album was recorded. So I'd like to give a huge thanks to everyone at Sunlog and Studio for making that happen. Iceland is famous for its incredible landscape with waterfalls, volcanoes and hot springs. It's famous for its fishing. It's famous for Björk. Sigur Rós are certainly up there with one of Iceland's finest exports, making so much intriguing music since their debut in 1997, including their third record that we discussed, The Brackets album. So, without further ado, let's get into the chat.
Thanks, Kjartan.
Thank you.
And, okay, so this is like done a bunch of listening parties on the radio, live, and on Twitter. But this would be the first listening party that we've done in actually the place that it was created. So I'm really thrilled about that. And what a place. I mean,
yeah, well, thank you.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you know, gorgeous. I think today's been a real eye-opener of how beautiful Iceland is. And this is just, I don't know, just seems to represent everything, you know, that I imagined, you know, your music to be and this place to be. So thanks for inviting us here.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for coming. Nice.
So we're going to talk about the album.
The Sausage album.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Is it that?
Yeah.
Parentheses.
Yeah.
Brackets. How do you refer to it as a band? What's it?
We talk about the Brackets album.
You took it out? Yeah. You call it the Brackets album?
Svigaplatan, we call it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what was the kind of process and the context sort of like leading up to the making of the album?
Yeah, so we did our album before that, August Perion, mm-hmm. and which kind of, you know, started things for us. You know, we went, you know, very quickly, we were touring, you know, in Europe and all over the place. And, but, I mean, we were really young.
Yeah.
You know, I was, 21 when August Perion came out.
Wonderful.
And so we were all kind of energetic, so we, you know, immediately went, you know, and wrote new songs.
Yeah.
And we were writing on tour, we were writing, just every time we came together, we just wrote a lot of music. And Orri was new in the band as well, mm-hmm. so that was very exciting. And so we were playing all these songs, you know, long before we recorded them. No, so we were all kind of, you know, chiseled a bit.
Yeah,
you know?
yeah.
And the same with, you know, because we had Amina, the string quartet,
yeah.
they were playing with us and they were touring with us as well quite early. So so they just made up their arrangements, you know, for these songs, you know, in sound checks and stuff like that.
So it was all quite organic.
Yeah.
And was that all done here as well? Or was that more rehearsal kind of? Space
yeah.
or is the recording
yeah,
space and the rehearsal space?
Yeah, it was mainly rehearsal spaces and our old studio before we got this. We had another studio in Reykjavik,
right.
In a house they, you know, torn down now. And some of the songs were written there. I mean, some riffs were, you know, created in Salin and Akureyri, you know. I mean, it was kind of all over the place, you know. Yeah. Some of it was written here in this, in this studio.
Fascinating. What does it start with? What does it say, a particular... Should we start off with the first song?
Yeah, we can, yeah.
We can press play. This is Untitled.
Mm-hmm.
Song number one.
Song number one.
Yeah. There's a few of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And...
That's actually based on... Yeah, but, I'm on fire. That's actually a riff from Orri. You know, he was... You know, the synth riff, it's a Uno 106 mm-hmm. synth.
Yeah.
And that is his riff, and he was always, you know, doing this, you know, the form is five bars. You know, he was all into that, you know, just, you know, having five bars and make it, you know, kind of add up, you know.
Yeah.
A bit autistic, you know.
Uh-huh.
And the same with the third song, that's also kind of, you know, the basis for that, that's also, you know, five bar, you know, form.
So
that's kind of Orri's, you know.
So not 4-4, you mean?
No, it's 4-4, but yep. It's, you know, usually, you know, the verses, like, you know, four bars, eight bars,
yes.
You know, 12
yeah.
or something.
Yeah.
This is five.
Got you, yeah.
So it's kind of...
Yeah, it's more of an... Yeah, and more interesting, I suppose, really.
Yeah.
And more complicated.
No, it's not complicated at all. It's just... No. It's just... Yeah, I think he was kind of always kind of thinking about. You know.
Should we have a listen and see if it evokes any more memories? I read that, you know, that it was in like two parts, and I mean, I suppose like, yeah, the second half does sound like more, kind of more of a band playing, I suppose, but. I mean, I just find this like really leading you into something. Obviously, it's the first track. Were the first three tracks always going to be in this order? Basically, or do you kind of work that out as you're going along?
Yeah, we always decide the order just kind of last minute.
Okay.
But the second and third tracks, they have always been together. I don't know why that is, but we've always played them like that, even live.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you realise what, you know, how good it was?
Yeah.
No. Did you think that everyone else would realise how good it was too?
No, I don't know. I mean, you know, when you're at that age, you know, doing stuff, you just, you know, you're just, there's so much confidence going on. Yeah. And I thought it was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, back then. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, yeah, when you're at that age, you're just so, you know, cocky and, you know, invisible, you know,
in a way. I've been there.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to ruin the listening experience, but I think the idea is to talk about the tracks as well. It's like, I mean, just keeps moving forward and forward and... growing into this.
Yeah, I really like this part because it's, you know, the first theme and the second one blended together.
Yeah.
And the strings, I think, is just beautiful on this part.
Amazing. What is that sound?
That's the Porter sound.
Okay. the real behind the curtain.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's our secret weapon. Yeah, it's everywhere. You know. This song, all the samples, it's all from that.
Very clever.
I always trigger this stuff live as well. You know this.
Yeah. And you're playing with the orchestras at the moment.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's really fun.
And you're about to do a whole lot more.
Yeah, yeah, we have 1 year left of touring, yeah, with the orchestra. We're playing this song, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great, you know, to expand the string arrangement to an orchestra. Really,
yeah.
Fun.
And, okay, so... I think we can have a round of applause for that. That's in my notes, to make sure I say that. I just bought my Iceland book from the centre of town. I thought I'd try it out. So, okay. The sequencing then, so you always played the second track two and track three together.
Yeah.
And then, how does all that work then? You know, just the songs just automatically feel like one song, or is it a story, or is it just musically just feel?
No, I think it was because we started doing it live.
Okay.
And we played all these songs live before. Yeah, before we recorded them, yeah. So, I think it's probably because of that. So those two songs kind of had to be together.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
And where did the idea of like splitting the album?
I think it was because, you know, the songs sounded, you know, different. Mm-hmm. And the first four kind of made sense together and the other four kind of made sense together. I mean, there's a big misconception that there's, you know, that there's anything clever about this album. There's nothing clever about this album. I mean, the reason it doesn't have a title is just we couldn't think of one. And it doesn't have any lyrics. And, you know, because we had been playing, you know, these songs for such a long time, it was just impossible to write new lyrics, you know,
yeah.
Because that's usually what we do, you know. You know, Jose does is like, you know, this Hoplantic, blah, blah, blah thing.
Hoplantic, yeah.
And then, you know, but when the song is fresh, we let's put some lyrics, you know, because you kind of want to have some lyrics on it.
Yeah.
But because we had been playing them for such a long time, it was kind of impossible to put lyrics, you know, into the vocal. And so that's why we just decided not to do that.
Yeah.
And because we didn't have any lyrics, it was kind of pointless to have titles as well. So, you know, we kind of, hey, let's just, you know, it's kind of nice. And the parentheses kind of, you know, oh, that kind of, puts it in perspective in a way.
Yeah.
But then, you know, afterwards, you know, then we had this idea, oh, yeah, maybe people can just make up their own lyrics. And but then, you know, then afterwards, it's, you know, everybody thinks it's such a, you know, conceptually clever thing, but it's not. It's just us being total nerds. You know?
I mean, there's not that many people who can get away with not singing, you know, words and stuff, I suppose.
Which is good. I mean, I'm often, you know, like the last album, I was like, and me and Jónsi were kind of debating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm always kind of more, you know, let's just not have lyrics. You know? I mean, it's fine, it works.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he kind of sings, you know, in that way, but...
Sounds, more sounds.
Yeah. So, but it's fun to have lyrics, but, I mean, I don't really think we are really good at writing lyrics. I think our lyrics are very often quite stupid, but... But nobody understands them anyway, so it's it doesn't matter.
I mean, I like the idea that you know, Sigaros and Cocteau Twins kind of like have sort of, you know, not real words, and I think once you put those two bands together, then I think that's kind of that's a good thing for me.
Yeah. That's actually funny because none of us had never heard the Cocteau Twins.
No, yeah.
And then we were always getting this comparison, you know, that oh, it's just like Cocteau Twins, but you know, a shoegaze band, you know.
Then.
You know, because Jónsi did a duet with Liz Fraser, you know, a few years back, you know, on his solo album.
I didn't know that.
And he just, oh, I'm going to check out this Cocteau Twins, everybody's been comparing us. and he kind of, yeah, he really liked it. And then he got us to do a duet with him.
Wow.
That was really cool.
I really like Iceland, sort of like jumpers.
Oh yeah,
and I think you got a really good jumper on. Just thought I'd mention
this
that.
One.
Yeah, and I've noticed a lot, and you know, in the shops, in the street, I'm definitely keen to get one.
You have to go to Hamper or something.
Yeah,
the Hamper Society.
Yeah, I think I want to join the club. It's a big fan of Echo and the Bunnymen's knitwear, and I think they did a trip out to Iceland. Am I right? Yeah. Yeah, to do the front cover of Porcupine.
Yeah, okay. Mm.
Anyway, so should we listen to the next track?
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is Untitled.
Untitled
two.
We call it Fyrsta, which means first.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think that this is the first song we wrote with Ori. Ori was new in the band.
Uh huh.
The first one we did with.
Okay. Fantastic. So,
and I remember, if I can just, because I'm on fire.
Yeah, you are on fire, and that's great.
When we were gonna audition all these drummers, you know, we had a long list, and we started with Ori, and he was always playing the hi-hat and stuff, and we were like, mm-hmm. You know, don't play the hi-hat. That's kind of stupid, and because we had kind of never done hi-hat-y stuff, and. And then he kind of changed, you know, his tone, and we wrote the song, you know, and he was just in the band.
More like beaters, and because it's more deep sounding than hi-hats.
Yeah, well, we were more, you know, playing the right thing, you know,
oh, okay.
We were kind of more over there, you know, on that side.
Yeah.
But,
A lot of the music. I mean, I'm sure you don't always listen back to your own
morning,
records.
I wake up, and start my day with a Sigur song, just to get me going.
Yeah, just to get you
get
going.
Get my ego going.
Yeah. You know? But you've been preparing, you know, for the and I guess writing for the orchestra, right? Or scoring and.
Yeah, so I had to go through a lot of songs here in the last, you know, 4 years. I've been listening a lot to Sigur.
Yeah.
To make these arrangements, for the tour we're doing now.
And what do you think about the songs when you're listening back? I mean, do you have...
I mean, I think it's actually, when I'm doing that, it's kind of more analytic, you know?
Okay.
And I'm kind of, ooh, you know, how can I kind of, you know...
So not emotional then?
Sort that, but when I'm hearing this, I'm, ooh, thinking, well, Jóns is so young. And,
yeah.
You know, and more kind of... Yeah, more kind of, emotional maybe.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much space in the tracks, you know, and there's so much, like, I suppose, room to dream in them, really, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
Like moments like this.
Yeah, I'm really proud of that guitar part, actually.
Yeah, good.
Yeah. Because it's just a fifth lower, kind of the same theme. Yeah, it's a bit nerdy. And also just listening to it now, I just think the strings are just fantastic,
yeah.
You know. But and that was just totally Amina just who arranged all of that, you know. So
what arranged just, you know, on
the spot.
I mean,
it was just a quartet, yeah, on the spot, just figuring it out. Yeah. And it's so beautiful to, you know, yeah, being in a string quartet, you kind of have to, you know, your place, kind of where you are in the spectrum of a chord, kind of.
Yeah.
And when you're playing in a string quartet, you know, not, you know, reading music, just, you know, kind of improvising, you really have to learn to, you know, read, you know, the people you're playing with. And that's, I think it's impressive because it's hard, you know, it's four people.
Yeah.
And they all kind of, you know, go, you know, they all hit the right tone, you know, because it's all, you know, about direction and, you know, letting the chord work, you know, within the string quartet. So if everybody moves the same way, you know, it's like when you're arranging for, you know, strings or vocals, you know, a choir or something, you know, you can't move everyone the same way because, you know, you can't have, you know, these parallels.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not really pleasing, you know, to the ears to have too much parallel stuff. And, but they just kind of, you know, make this web that just really works, you know.
And did you all work on it together with the string quartet? Or
no, it was just them who just, you know, did it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. Yeah. Especially in retrospect when you stop thinking about yourself as much, you know. And
yeah. We're going straight into...
Samskiti. Yeah, this one we actually did not record in this room.
Okay.
We did three recordings of this. We did one here. We did one in a community center called Hlégarður, just 200 meters away. But ended up using a recording we did in Real World Studios in Bath.
Oh, okay, yes. Great. So did you see?
We mixed it there, actually, yeah.
Did you see Peter Gabriel?
Yeah.
Breakfast with a lot of the bands, right?
He came over, this was what, 2001, he came over, you know, in his, you know, cycling pants, and he had a goatee at the time as well.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, this guy is so fucking over, you know. And he just released an album just, you know, a few years earlier, and it's just, I'm just trying to describe, you know, how arrogant and full of yourself you can be when you're, you know, like, you know, in this... It's kind of necessary, though, you know, to some extent, but the last 3 years I've just been listening so much to Peter Gabriel and realizing how much influence he was on me when I was a kid, you know, because I used to listen to him so much in the 80s.
Yeah, me too.
But when we met him, you know, in the studio, we were all like, you know, whatever. Peter, woohoo, you know, this old man.
I did
it's just so ridiculous.
I did the same in Bath with Peter Gabriel, myself, and also the first time we went to a studio called Conk, and that's owned by Ray Davis. And he walked in, he was just like looking for, you know, I think he was looking for a tweeter in a speaker, or he was trying to change it. And it was just like, oh, there's this guy who runs a studio. It's like Ray Davis from the Kinks.
Yeah.
It's funny thing. It's a funny thing.
It's crazy.
So, if Iceland is the movie, then Sigur Rós is the soundtrack.
Yes. Yeah, I've heard this one before, yeah.
I bet you have. Would you agree with that, though?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, sure. But, you know, I mean, there are so... I mean, Monsters of Men, you know.
Yeah. It's the same.
Are they not the soundtrack of
Iceland? It applies to them as well.
I don't know. It's just, wow. Did the tune go down? Yeah, well, what was I going to say?
We're talking about the
the landscape and the landscape. I think it's just more a coincidence, you know. I don't think all the other boys were all city boys. I was only countryside, you know, boy in the band, and I think, you know, before we did the Heima film, I think some of them hadn't really traveled that much actually
right.
around the Iceland. So I think it's maybe it's more about, I think it's just more about the space, you know, and also back in the 90s, living in Reykjavik was just a, you know, it's just a small village, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, and I was just beautiful. Barði Jóhannsson, you know, Icelandic musician, put it, you know, a few years ago. It was like, you know, back in the 90s, you just, you know, did what you did, and, you know, nobody's going to play your music on the radio anyway, and it doesn't matter, and you just do your stuff. And that's kind of the attitude that was, you know. Now it's more, you know, everybody's, you know, ooh, you know, they're going to make it, you know, around the corner, they're just making it, you know, with, you know, do one hit or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that has changed quite a lot, but I think, I mean, we were just doing what we were doing.
Yeah.
And there was no nature inspiration or anything like that. But it just, and it's also at the same time as Iceland is kind of getting more, you know, recognized as a, you know, as a place to visit, and you know, more tourists, and just the music fits, you know, it fits.
Yeah.
But there's not really any connection. Maybe we used to say that, you know, back in the day. Oh yeah, we're inspired by nature. I don't know, but there's no direct connection, I think. Yeah. No intentional connection.
No intentional, yeah.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, sounds pretty good to me. As a statement. I mean, you know, I grew up sort of on the outskirts of Manchester, and my music, it's very Manchester kind of inspired. Yeah.
Do you think it is Manchester?
Yeah. My stuff, yeah. And sort of, you know, well, just like 20 miles outside of Manchester inspired. But you know, I was, you know, kind of, I was born in Salford and lived on the outskirts of town, and just Manchester music was my thing, really. So I didn't really listen to much outside of Manchester music.
Mm-hmm.
The Fall and New Order and,
yeah.
You know, the Smiths as well.
Yeah, so you kind of feel that, you know, a connection.
Yeah, connection.
From that, because... And the music that was going on.
Yeah, and also we have...
And we just had, you know, Sugar Cubes and Mesoforte.
Well, I was just talking with Siggy from Sugar Cubes, and we actually played together in 1992.
Yeah.
The Charlatans and Sugar Cubes supported Pearl Jam.
Which is amazing.
Which is an amazing thing. And Eddie Vedder was a big Sugar Cubes fan.
Yeah.
And it's a good story.
Yeah.
But I mean, lots of, you know, Icelandic bands seem to sort of translate around the world, it seems.
Yeah, I guess. And they're all very different as well.
Yeah,
I
mean, very different, yeah.
I mean, there's not many similarities to Kaleo and Sigrós, although Kaleo is from this very town, you know. And as well as Jónsi, and I used to live here as well, so. They're very different bands.
Yeah. But I think my point is, we've just been to a beautiful place. What was the place called we've just been to? Is it the Sky
Lagoon?
Oh, yeah.
Sky Lagoon.
I've never been there.
Okay, so right by the water, in water, by the water.
Yeah.
And the sky, and, you know, the kind of like the sun sort of like gloaming, you know, and it's just, yeah, I get it. You know, I get the music. And I get the scenery, and just so beautiful together. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I went, my first trip to the Blue Lagoon was with some journalists from England.
Oh, was it? Yeah. I bet they loved it, right?
Yeah, they loved it. And we were, ooh.
Yeah, this is great.
We were all like, ooh.
You got any beer? Brilliant.
And we did that a lot. Because that's kind of what you did back then. You know, you had these people, you know, coming over, and we took trips to Laugavatn. There's a, you know, really fancy spa there now, but back then it was just a shed, you know, with a hole, which was a, you know, And there was steam coming out of it. Yeah. That was the sauna, you know, kind of. And you didn't really pay, you know, maybe 500 kroner or something. In a box or something.
My friend said he interviewed you for a magazine called Q.
Yeah.
And there was a feature that was called Cash for Questions. And one of the, so that meant that the audience could send in questions to the magazine to be asked to their favourite bands. And a question to your band was, do you have sheds? Which apparently you all got very excited about and started talking about that, probably more than the probing journalistic questions that were, you know, being asked of you. But can you expand on that?
No, I did have a shed then. Okay. Which, well, I was really happy about. There was actually a good line in the Detectorist, you know, Mackenzie Crook, you know,
show.
Which I love. This is the best show. Maybe he said something like, you know, you know, a man over 30 who doesn't have a shed, he, you know, he has a problem, you know. over 40 maybe it was. There was some, you know, at, you know, a certain age in your life, if you don't have a shed, you do something wrong, you know.
Well, I know people who've made some great albums in sheds.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, enough about sheds. Can we move on to Untitled number 4?
Yeah.
And I struggle with the pronunciation.
Njósnavelin or Nósjavelin.
Nósjavelin, yeah.
Some people, which I don't know what it means. But.
Shall we have a quick blast?
This organ line, I think I stole it from, I used to live down by the big church, and every 15 minutes the bell towers, you know, goes, and there's this one tune, I think I, you know, I just thought about it years later. There's a song, because I would always be walking around, you know, because I lived in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
There's this one song, it's just it's some Lutheran hymn or something. I think it's called Vistur to Conquer Jesu Klaur in Icelandic. I don't know the name. Probably some German hymn.
Yeah.
And I probably stole that line, or was influenced by that line, I think. From the... Well, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I think so. It's just a funny story.
I always thought that it said desire.
Yeah, desire, the lyrics.
Yeah, the lyric. It was desire on my way home, which I thought... It's kind of like, I mean, it's not, obviously. Well, I don't know whether it is or not, but it doesn't, it's probably not, but maybe it is. But those two things seem quite contrasty and quite evocative as well.
Well, provocative, but...
Well, if it were desire and on my way home, it's kind of like quite a beautiful thing, you know, to think about, I think.
Yeah.
With that song. You said there was some edits that you would rather clear up now if you had the chance again.
Well, I remember it now. It was like, oof. We were trying really hard to... Yeah, but yeah, it's fine.
To draw them out on a... Maybe, or...
Yeah, because it's all on tape and stuff. So,
oh, wow,
you know, kind of switch channels and kind of, you know, do it like that.
It's fascinating that it was done on tape.
Yeah. Yeah, we always did that, you know. I think all our records, except the last one, was recorded on tape.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I think, in many ways, I think tape kind of died out a bit in maybe 98 or something like that, 1998, for us anyway.
Yeah.
And you know, the way that we made records.
It's so much fun to record on tape.
Oof. It's so much fun. I mean, yeah, I mean, the difficulties, like, you know, slicing tape and stuff like that, you can get away with now because of Pro Tools and stuff, but yeah, the sound is fantastic.
But it's also like, you know, when you're doing, you know, on Pro Tools, and, I mean, you do like, you know, 24 takes, and they're all, you know, similarly bad. But when you have a tape, you have 15 minutes of tape, you have what, you know, two or three goes or something?
Yeah.
Well, a Siguro song is maybe two goes, maybe three?
Yeah, yeah.
And
it's 15 minutes, isn't it?
Yeah, like the time. And then you pick one.
Yeah, I know.
Or you just erase the whole thing and start again.
I know.
It's so much simpler.
Yeah, yeah. Back to tape.
Yeah.
Keep it analog. Yeah. So you got quite an amazing sort of assortment of keyboards here. Can you go through them?
Yeah. This is, you know, Maria's grandfather's piano.
Wow.
Maria, my wife, and Amina as well. An old Steinway.
Wow.
New York.
Yeah, beautiful.
It needs refurbishing, but, you know.
How did you get it here?
Oh, yeah, I had the piano movers just take it down here.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It came from New York, though?
No. Oh. I always just been, in, you know, in the country for 100 years.
Oh, okay. Yeah. 100 years, wow.
Yeah, this one is something the piano movers were going to throw away, and I just took it.
Yeah.
Mellotron.
Mellotron. Beatles used them famously.
Yeah, we used it quite a lot on our TAC album, this one. And yeah, then we have a harmonium, which we obviously used quite a lot.
It's a big one.
Yeah. I used to have five in here, I just had to get rid of. Because they're always throwing these away. Because they used to be all over the country, these harmoniums.
Yeah, yeah.
And because they're lighter than pianos and used to be in every home, you know, everywhere.
And they're a pump organ, aren't they?
Yeah.
I love the sound of harmonium.
But if you go on Facebook or something, you know, there's always somebody, you know, throwing away a harmonium. And me and my friend David, who lives up the street, were always like, okay, I'll take it. And then we kind of stuck with it. And yeah. Then we have the Celeste.
Oh, nice.
I think. Which we used quite a lot, Siguros. I was thinking it was actually in that last song we were listening to.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Moog was in the second song, and the Hammond organ. And the CP80, which is kind of my main keyboard. That's what I play all the time.
Right.
Or those two, you know, in the corner, there's a SK30 Yamaha, which is my organ sound on this track that we were listening to.
That's the organ sound, is it? Yeah, okay.
Not the Hammond organ.
No, but it's good to mix, you know, good to mix the sound, isn't it?
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. Wow.
And then Rhodes. Yeah, we used that on all the tracks on this album.
And it's obviously, I mean, it's... you said that it was the synth before, though, because a simulation
no,
of Rhodes.
On the first one?
Yeah, on the first track.
No, it's a Uno. Roland Uno. Yeah.
No, I don't know it. I'll have to investigate.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, I think it's in the back here somewhere, I think.
Okay, so the next track, untitled number 5,
mm-hmm.
Álafoss.
We are in Álafoss. This area is called Álafoss.
Okay. Wow, beautiful.
And there's a waterfall up here. A foss is a waterfall.
Mm-hmm.
And Ál is a eel. Used to be lots of eels in this river.
Yeah.
And so it's called Eel Waterfall, you know, Álafoss. And that's the name of the area here.
Was it?
And I think this is probably the first song we wrote in the studio.
Oh, fantastic. You
know. And recorded, yeah.
Should we take a listen?
Yeah. It's really slow.
Good. Gorgeous.
Yeah. really slow stuff.
Really slow stuff. Could you describe it as ambient, do you think?
No, not this one. No.
Okay, good.
I mean, there's a beat, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, but some ambient obviously has beat, but.
Would it be.
But
like...
it is kind of, though. Yeah, maybe ambient. Mm. I don't know, but.
I was just getting into that before it started.
But he's, you know, doing the brush on the snare, and, you know, it's kind of. So there's a little bit of swing in it as well, you know.
A little bit of swing in it as well. Yeah. Where did that come from then? Where did it evolve?
This one, it's probably the organ started this one, yeah. I would think. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm trying to see if the glitching's gone now.
With this one, I remember the ending is a bit silly, you know, kind of ends in this hippie rock power thing, which is a bit silly, I think, today. But
I don't know.
But it was fun at the time.
It's weird how you think about it, stuff. It's the way that no one else would think about it. And I understand that from making music myself.
Yeah.
It's that there's things I wish maybe we hadn't done at the time, but then you can't really talk about it too much because it's a lot of people's favourite bit.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, that's true.
and that's, yeah. But this, I mean...
Yeah, but I mean, I really love these slow songs. And I remember, you know, later it was so hard to get the boys to play these songs. You know,
yeah.
People, when you're touring, you're always playing the same stuff, and you just... Yeah, it's just hard, you know.
Do you feel, when you play live, do you feel that, you know, it's like, we're playing this too fast?
Oh, yeah. We usually play everything too fast.
Yeah. Yeah. I think lots of bands do, don't they?
Yeah. But I just love playing live, so I really get into it as well, but yeah, maybe it's not like that with everyone, I don't know. But we didn't play that song for years and years. But we have it's on the orchestral show.
It is, I was going to ask,
I did an orchestral version of this, which I'm quite happy with.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it. How many in the orchestra then? Is it full orchestra?
Yeah, I think they're 41.
41, yeah. Wow.
Strings, brass and percussion.
Wow. Do you all travel together?
No, we always have local bands.
Yeah. Oh, right, okay.
Yeah.
And so
it's
important to score it then. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it has to be very thorough. Yeah. But it's a long day. It's, you know, from we start rehearsing at 12 and we're back at the hotel at 11, 12 or something.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Georg is playing the Ibo on the bass on this one again.
So good, yeah. Ibo on the bass. I mean, I wonder whether that is kind of like why I started to think about Brian Eno at this point, and I think it was just like the kind of Ibo vibes coming through. I mean, not that, you know, it's just I was clutching at straws, really, you know. But
yeah, maybe.
But were you fans of, like, you know, say? Music for airports and things like that.
I mean,
before.
Ambient too, you know, Practice of Mirrors and, you know, the Harold Budd albums. I just listened to those every day, you know, when
fantastic.
I was like 18 or something. It was just my thing.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, really. And you know, I realized now, I didn't think about it when we were doing all this, but now I'm just, I was so influenced by that stuff. You know, Harold Budd doing all this, you know, Parallel Sixth and you know, all that stuff, which I do quite a lot, you know.
Yeah.
So it's just a very obvious connection there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's a great one. It's a cool one, isn't it? You know, it's like, I'm a big fan myself.
Yeah, it's amazing stuff.
This was, I wrote down Synthetic Soundscapes, which I was talking to you backstage. And we had no idea what that actually meant, but... none of this was done in the box, in the you know,
this song is just completely live.
Yeah.
Everything about this.
Yeah.
I play the Rhodes, I wrote up the Rhodes.
Yeah.
Everything else is just, this is just a live recording of.
Yeah.
I had the organ up there, I think, at the time.
Yeah.
And Orri was, you know, down here with a. We didn't have the curtain, so the drum sound was much more open than it is now. And harsher.
When you saw this place, did you think straight away that as a swimming pool, did you think it was going to be a perfect studio?
Yeah, I mean, there was a visual artist who had a studio here, and I mean, we were looking for a place. I don't know. That's just how we thought, you know.
Yeah.
We did our first album. It was pretty successful. We got some money. Let's buy a studio.
Yeah.
I don't know. That was the thing to do.
Yeah, it just makes sense. So you have your own space and
Does it make sense?
Well, I did the same.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And did it make sense? Probably not. At first, we were offered, we were asked if we wanted to buy the place. And we thought, well, we'll be here probably for about 2 years. So no, we'll just rent it. And we're still in the same spot now.
Yeah.
So we could have bought it like 10 times over.
Yeah.
What we did find and what we did love was the fact that we could, you know, that it was ours to just go in whenever we wanted.
Yeah.
And you know, there's no other people around to influence, you know, because when you go to a big studio and there's lots of other bands, you know, you kind of end up going out with them a lot and
of course.
No, instead of working.
But creatively, of course, it makes sense.
Creatively,
especially
it makes
sense.
Especially
when you're, you know, in that phase, you know, in your life, which I was talking about before, where it was just, you do an album and it's just next, and, you know, you're just constantly, you're just doing this.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have any children.
Yeah.
And, this is just your life, you know, and there's nothing else that, you know, interrupts that.
Yeah.
You know, you don't even have a car, you don't have a house,
you
buy a studio, and you just keep
That's
on
it. Just keep on working.
Yeah.
And you keep all your gear here as well.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah. But the boys, I bought, you know, me and Biggie, who used to be our house engineer, we bought in 2010, you know, we bought out the other boys, so it's. And then 2 years ago, Biggie just gave up on this studio business because it's ridiculous. so now I'm stuck with it.
Yeah. That's good.
But, you know, Georg and Jónsi and Orri, they got rid of it 2010, I think. Yeah. Years ago.
So
but, you know, of course, I keep all our, you know, communal gear.
Yeah, exactly. And you can rehearse here as well.
Yeah.
So it just makes sense. It's multi-purpose.
Yeah.
Got a nice kitchen.
Yeah, so I kind of want to refurbish it.
Bathroom, everything.
Has a bathroom, it flushes, you know, toilet that flushes.
You mentioned Ebo on the bass.
Yeah.
Untitled 6 is...
Called Ebo, yeah.
Too, so, I mean...
Yeah, he plays the Ebo constantly on the bass there, yeah.
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 You know,
it's very
creative
sound,
people,
right?
You know, let's
exactly.
Call it Ebo.
Yeah. First time I ever noticed Ebo was on Parallel Lines. I noticed Chris Stein was playing Ebo guitar, and I thought, what is that? Yeah, fascinating.
It's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, it's a really cool thing.
Oh, yeah, and Jónsi uses an Ebo in Untitled 3, you know, Samskit.
So Ebo first comes in there as well.
Yeah.
Any Ebo on the electric guitar?
Jónsi plays it on the guitar then. Yeah. But I don't think we ever used an Ebo after that. I don't think so.
Right.
Yeah.
The spotlight is on.
Yeah.
Shall we have a listen to Untitled 6, Ebo?
Yeah.
Thank you.
That was really interesting what you were saying then about, you know, using two fingers. You know, you got two hands, but you're using two fingers.
Yeah.
Creating the space.
Yeah, because there's so much space in the song, and there's not any room for you know, additional stuff. You know, I mean, I could be doing like jazzy, you know,
keyboard players like to do that a lot,
yeah,
don't they?
Yeah, but it's you know, you can't do that.
No.
You know, then you ruin the space that's been created, and I was just, you know, saying that, you know, it's such a simple album. It's just, you know, usually just these four elements and you know, everything additional is so sparse, you know.
Yeah.
So it's I think it's also just, you know, the space we were at this time, you know, we were just so into it. And and it's like you know, like the bass is just, you know, he's playing the epo on the bass and he has to be so precise and just can't move. And
yeah.
I mean, you still see it when he's playing it on stage. He's like a statue, just moving like this.
If you don't get it right on the string,
you lose it.
You just lose it. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Yes. So yeah, very, very lots of concentration, lots of space.
Yeah, and it's just like everyone is so aware of the space, you know,
yeah.
And you know, careful not to disrupt it, kind of. It's just nice.
I'm just gonna go to Untitled number 7. Just to keep things moving along, I think.
Yeah, this one's called Dauðalagið, or the Death Song.
The Death Song?
Yes. Because it was so depressing, we decided to call it. Yeah, this one's probably a one take here in St. Lane, I think. Yeah.
You got a nice Neve desk upstairs.
Yep. Yeah, we do, which doesn't work anymore.
It doesn't?
No.
They sound great, though.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
Was it working?
Yeah, it's all recorded through the Neve, yeah.
Amazing. Takes you somewhere.
Yeah. it's maybe a record to listen to privately. I mean, this everything is so slow. It's kind of, I get a little embarrassed. You know, all these people are just sitting there. You know, everything takes such a while.
I think people are just like taking it all in, and probably wishing that we could play the whole thing. You know.
Yeah.
But
it's all so long, you know. And the next one is 12 minutes, you know.
Well, we'll play a couple of minutes of that. I was wondering if I never normally do this with listening parties, but if you don't mind, if there's some questions, that anyone has any questions at the end, might be quite a good thing,
yeah.
if that's okay. So got 12 minutes to think of a question for. Edited down to maybe about 4.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. What are your memories about this song?
I don't remember where we wrote it, but I love this song. I think
it's very still. It feels like it's kind of, I don't know, kind of stilted a little bit.
Yeah, it's just really sad, this song. I don't know. Yeah.
As in mood or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very dramatic as well. And also, you know, we put the Brewer boss on the drums in the break, so it's like huge, you know, when it's on its own. And yeah, I really enjoyed. Oh yeah, oh, whew, playing it live. There's a moment there with Georg, you know, me and him together. Mm-hmm. It's one of my life favorite moments.
Right. Okay.
Always look at each other. So it's really fun to have those moments, you know.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And yeah.
I mean, you did say that
the strings are really cool as well. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
You said that it was kind of like more rock and roll, the sort of like the second half. Of
yeah,
the album.
Second half is just us playing, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe that's, you know, like a, you know, like a band, you know, drum, bass, guitar, keyboards.
Yeah, well, cool rock and roll. I mean, you know, what kind of things?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, you know, obviously not, you know, typical rock and roll, but.
Yeah.
But yeah, playing together, kind
yeah,
of, you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
in the live setting.
Yeah.
Then the first half of the album is, you know, more, you know, more settled and,
yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
more kind of studio,
yeah.
you know, thing. Although, you know, Sam Skate, you know, the third song was, you know, completely live, you know, with the strings and all of that. I mean, most of the strings are overdubbed, you know, on this album,
yeah.
and which we did here in this room.
Should we play the last track?
Yeah.
How did you come about thinking that this is going to be the last track on title number 8?
Yeah, because you can't really play anything after it.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. That's. I mean, that's a good reason.
Yeah. yeah. I mean, and when we play it live, you know,
yeah.
we always, you know, close with this song.
Yeah.
Not on the orchestral tour, obviously, but...
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, you can't really play anything after that song. It's just...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Nothing would be, nothing would top it, kind of thing.
No, it's, you know, it's all the way to 11 as
well. How do you feel about like these times now? You know, how do you feel about 2002?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was great. Yeah, it was fun. A lot of work and you know, super dedication and yeah.
yeah. And then, I suppose, you know, the world caught up with you, what you were doing, and
yeah, yeah. That's just how it is, isn't it? But yeah, I mean, it was really good times, you know.
Yeah.
We were
yeah.
touring everywhere and yeah, everything going great and yeah. Yeah. And really just, yeah, like I was maybe trying to describe before, I mean, the sync within the band was just like, you know, really, really good.
Yeah.
And also, you know, a lot of this being written on tour, it's, yeah, it was just, you know, there's just so much playfulness and, you know, so much fun, you know, playing together
yeah.
and good understanding between everyone.
Yeah.
Which is kind of ridiculous to think about today because we're so immature.
Yeah.
But, you know, musically, like really kind of, you know, everybody kind of knowing their place, you know.
And has things sort of like changed a lot over the years or?
Yeah, well, I think more, you know, people maybe know their place, you know, between each other, you know,
yeah.
personally.
Yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah. No,
musically, I don't know, it's just like. Yeah, well, but still, it is kind of easy. It's like when we started, and not easy, when we wrote the last album we did, it was, you know, during COVID, mm-hmm. or just before COVID, maybe. I don't know. Yeah, well, so I went, you know, to visit Jónsi in LA and we spent a week together and we wrote one song, you know, each day we would write a song.
Nice.
And then, you know, 6 months later we would do it again and we wrote another 6 songs. Yeah. And, yeah, I mean, it's like,
you know, you've known someone for, you know, such a long time.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just, you know, just clicks really easily.
Yeah, clicks back into how it was.
And, you know, even, you know, because I wasn't even in the band, I'd left the band and I wasn't in the band for, you know, 10, 15 years or something. And, yeah, but still it was like, you know, like we were just playing last week or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, or writing, you know, together.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Georg came into it and, you know, it was like, you know, everything he did was like, oh, yeah, of course.
Fantastic.
So, yeah.
But you're very
so that's
proud
maybe
of it.
Something that kind of really, I mean, when, yeah, when you, because the band was started, you know, I was 16 when we started, you know, started doing this.
Wow.
And so, yeah, that's just something that, you know, when it happens to you, when you're that young, it just, you know, it stuck on you, I think.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of relationship.
Yeah. Well, we're all really excited to be here, and thank you so much for talking us through
this wonderful
album. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks to Kjartan Svensson for joining me on this special live recording of my listening party to tell me all about the 2002 Sigur Rós album, the Brackets album. The listening party may be over, but you can keep getting in touch on socials using the hashtag TimsListeningParty. Every song in this episode of my listening party was taken from Sigur Rós, the Brackets album. All tracks are written by Sigur Rós. The album was released on Fat Cat and Bad Taste in October 2002. See you next time.
This is Absolute Radio.
Tim's Listening Party.